Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, welcome back. We're at it again. I can't believe another week's gone by. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're trying our best to make this another hour the most scintillating financial talk on the radio. Anyway, going to do our market update, but we got to condense it down a little bit because we've got an interview today with Brent Johnson. I've been looking forward to this one for a really long time because maybe there's some self-indulgence there. Brent is one of the few guys I know that sees things similarly to the way that we do. And, you know, you could find a lot of different opinions, but I think one of the things that people miss is that they see some good economic growth and obviously strong asset prices across the board. But the issues that we've been talking about on this show, the issues that we've seen over the last 10 years, they have not abated. They have not receded, right? There are massive, massive imbalances and problems out there in the world. And the temptation at this point in the cycle with prices where they're at and the economic momentum where it's at is to sit there and dismiss all that. Ah, there's no problem. You've been saying that for years. That's true. We have, right? But it's Know Your Risk Radio. We're always focused on the risks because it's the biggest thing. And I would just challenge you, listen to this interview with Brent Johnson and perhaps go on to realvision.com where he's got a couple other presentations. And we have to think about the world in a different manner. And if you want concrete evidence for that, look at how many countries around the world. I believe there's still $8, $9 trillion worth of sovereign debt out there that's trading in negative territories. We currently have the highest debt to GDP in the history of the country. We're going to be looking at something between $1.5 to $2 trillion deficits at some point in the next 2 to 3 years. Right? The world has completely changed. And I don't think it's being reflected in asset prices, and I think that that's likely to continue for some time. But it does not mean that we can do things the way that we've always done them. And look, when these things come to a head, everybody always asks me, Zach, how does it end? You know, what does it look like when it comes undone? Look, it's not the end of the world. But what's going to happen is that one day we're going to wake up and a lot of us are going to have a lot less money than we had the day before. The world will go on. I think there will be aspects of it that are reminiscent of 2008, 2009, but not if we take the right precautions. And that's one of the biggest things that we're always trying to tell clients, look, there are better ways to do things. And if you've got the typical advisor, look, I get their game. My first brokerage job was with Wells Fargo Advisors. I've worked on all sides of the industry. I'm not saying that there's nothing in what they're telling you about stocks and bonds. I'm just saying you need a much greater level of diversification and you need to shield yourself from the inevitability of rising rates. It's going to happen. And if you want to know how to do that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can set up a consultation, get a copy of our free booklet that we talk about during the breaks. But more than anything, I would encourage you to sit back and listen to this interview to kind of get a window into how we think and ask yourself, is my advisor talking like this? Is he looking at these risks? Is he defending my portfolio against these possible challenges that seem like they're very real? They're out there. So anyway, sit back. Hope you enjoyed the interview. We got to run, but got a great one, and I think you're going to like it. But we got to roll, take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Brent Johnson, the founder of the Santiago Gold Fund based out of San Francisco. Until then, you're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Michael Medved. Financial experts will tell you that you should have a plan in place for the high cost of long-term care. If your plan consists of using your savings to pay for any long-term care needs in the future, then take a moment to contact 525 Advisors. 525 Advisors are the local long-term care experts. They will show you how to set up an asset-based plan using a portion of your existing savings. Now, this way you maintain control of your money and you're guaranteed to get your money back even if you don't need long-term care. For every dollar you put in today, 525 Advisors will show you how to get $3 to $4 back in tax-free long-term care protection. Call 525 Advisors today to learn how you can put a portion of your savings to work and protect your family and the rest of your assets from the high costs of long-term care. Call today at 425-748-8188. That's 425-748-8188 and 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome to the show today, and we are lucky enough to be joined by Brent Johnson, the founder and head of the Santiago Gold Fund. And if I'm saying any of this wrong, Brent, you can feel to jump in there and correct me. But we were actually teasing this last week. Very excited to have Brent on here today. And usually, and this is, I'm saying this as much to you, Brent, as well. Usually what we're trying to do here is we're trying to take complex financial issues and break them down in such a way that they're edible, that they're digestible to our listeners who not in a condescending manner, but they don't do this for a living. And so let me just give you a warning. This is some pretty heady stuff, pretty wonkish. So that's why I'm all excited, obviously. And, you know, just hang with us here because we live in a fairly complex world, and we're going to try to do the best to make this digestible, like I said earlier. So Brent, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on and talk with you. And you know, to your point, a lot of the presentations or interviews or, you know, those types of things that I do, really, it is a way to kind of break these complex problems down into kind of simpler and easier to understand concepts. And so hopefully I can try to get my point across while doing that today.
Yeah, you and me both. Now, give us a little bit of just a quick summation of what you do currently for a living and kind of a story about how you got here at this point in your career.
Sure. For those who have heard this before, I apologize for the repetition, but I started off working for a major Wall Street firm back in the late 90s. It was called Donaldson, Lufkin & Jenrett. I was in their high net worth group. You know, we were managing money for wealthy families and individuals. Credit Suisse bought Donaldson, Lufkin & Jenrett about a year after I started, and so then I was part of Credit Suisse for the next 10 years. And, you know, in late, call it 2006, 2007, I came to the conclusion that something just wasn't right, and that we were going to have, I'm not going to say I predicted the crash because I didn't. And I certainly wasn't smart enough to figure out that shorting the banks was the way to profit from it.
You and me both.
But I just knew something wasn't right and had a conversation with my boss, for lack of a better word, about it. And his answer was, your job is not to think. That's what we have a chief investment officer for. Your job is to go out and raise money from clients to, you know, invest in our products. And, you know, that just didn't really sit very well with me. And so, you know, at the end of 2009, I took my clients and I left Credit Suisse. And I joined a friend of mine who I had previously worked with at Credit Suisse at a firm called Baker Avenue Asset Management, where I currently still, you know, manage client portfolios at Baker Avenue. In addition to that, in late 2011, based on the problems that I saw going on in the overall monetary system, I set up Santiago Gold Fund, which is essentially the precious metal solution for my clients' overall portfolios. So, you know, a lot of people know me through the gold world because I tend to talk about gold a lot because I don't feel enough people do talk about gold lot as far as part of an overall portfolio. There's a lot of people who talk just about gold. There's a lot of people who talk about traditional assets, but there's not a lot of people that talk about them together. So I always just kind of point that out to people that I'm not somebody who thinks you should sell everything you own and just own gold, but I think it's a key part to everyone's portfolio. And that's what I'm doing now. And so, you know, I think it's a fascinating time. I think if you're somebody who works in the financial industry, either managing assets or advising on assets, this is like the Super Bowl or the World Cup or whatever you want to call it. It's about as big as it gets. The stakes are about as high as it gets. And it's going to be really interesting to see who comes out on top.
Music to my ears. And for those joining us here, listeners, I found Brent because he gave a very prescient and what I thought thought-provoking presentation on realvision.com. He's been on there several times. And it shocked me, and the listeners of this show, Brent, will know, because we've been talking about things very similarly. I'm in the same camp. I was raised around the gold industry, and we encourage our clients to have it as a part of a diversified portfolio approach, but we are not gold bugs. However, it's sort of hard to look, in my opinion, at the monetary and financial landscape of the world today and not advocate for gold being part of the portfolio. So now, getting back to that presentation, and this is, I want to transition into go, why is it that we think that? Because I think you and I see pretty eye to eye on that topic about having gold as part of your portfolio, and you put it together in a way that even I hadn't put together as nearly as concisely and cleanly as you did in your dollar milkshake theory. And it's a big complex theory, but if we could start there and you could kind of walk us through what that milkshake theory is and how it affects your framework and the way you see things.
Sure. And if you don't mind, I'll take one step back from the milkshake theory, and then one or two steps I'll get to it.
Yep.
But essentially, you know, let's call it back in the 2006 to 2000 timeframe, when I knew that there was just something wrong and I didn't quite understand what it was. I went back to my, you know, money and banking textbooks, and I went online and I really started studying central banking and how it works and et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the day, if you boil it down, the monetary system itself is designed in a way that has a major design flaw. And the design flaw is that it has to grow. The money supply, the global money supply has to grow. And if something always has to grow, then it'll eventually go exponential and it'll, you know, go straight up, which eventually crashes. So because of this design flaw, it's guaranteed that that at some point the monetary system will crash. Now, whether it crashes or whether everything gets inflated away to nothing because the central banks have to inflate in order to prevent the crash, or whether the crash happens before the central banks can save it, one of those two things is going to happen. It's really just simple math. And, you know, one of my taglines is that if you believe in math, buy gold, because because of this flaw in the monetary system.
Right.
Now, subsequent to 2008, you know, the central banks came out and they all kind of got together and they started injecting money into the banking system, injecting new money into the banking system to try to prop up all the bad debts. And I did not think that they would be able to inject $20 trillion into the economy and not create a massive amount of inflation. Now, they did create massive asset price inflation. That's why you saw the real estate markets rebounded. That's why you see the stock markets at all-time highs. But, you know, and some things in the consumer market did go up in price, but some things went down in price. Some commodities rose, some commodities fell. They didn't all this injection of money into the banking system did not create the runaway consumer price inflation that a lot of people will, you know, equate with hyperinflation, et cetera, et cetera. It just didn't happen. And I think that was confusing to a lot of people. And to be honest, it was confusing to me as well. And so, you know, I had always believed that clients should have gold in the portfolio for either the inflationary, hyperinflation spiral or the collapse due to all the debt in the world. And because, I know I'm kind of rambling here, but I promise you it's all going to come together.
No, it's great. Take your time.
Because the central banks continued to pump liquidity into the system, and in order for the system to survive, lending has to continue to take place, the debts not only didn't get resolved after 2008, but they've expanded immensely. You know, but going back to my point that the system has to grow or else that it dies. And so 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, I put out a presentation called Step Into Liquid, basically explaining all this in more detail and talking about all the different ways that liquidity was needed or else this monumental creation of debt was going to swamp the overall system and create a big deflationary spiral, for lack of a better one. And it was in that point where I started saying that contrary to the typical person in the gold world's view of the dollar getting inflated away, I figured out that there was a way that the Fed at least could, and it could in fact stop stimulus and in fact start raising rates. It was unlikely, but that it was possible, and that if certain things happened, that could continue. But that would lead to incredible dollar strength, which would be a problem for everyone else in the world. And so, you know, over the last couple of years, I've kind of, I guess, refined that, for lack of a better word, and that ultimately came up into the dollar milkshake theory. And at the end of the day, the dollar milkshake theory is one that, because the U.S. has the world reserve currency, which is the U.S. dollar, and because that is used in, you know, far and away the majority of global trade, and because countries around the world, entities around the world, have issued debt in dollars, even though they're not U.S. entities, the U.S. dollar is still in an incredible amount of demand. Estimate that just to pay the interest on current dollar-based debt in the world, it probably takes around $2 trillion a year just to pay the interest on dollar-based debt. And that's if we never issue another dollar of debt going forward. So even if everyone were to say, you know what, we're no longer using the dollar, going forward we're going to have either bilateral trade agreements or use a new currency, all that existing debt still exists. And until it's resolved, there's a couple trillion dollars of dollar-based demand a year for dollars. So despite all the talk about de-dollarization and the fact that people are sick of the dollar and that other countries are tired of being at the mercy of U.S. monetary policy, they don't really have a choice. They've issued the dollar debt. They have to pay it back. And so there is this incredible amount of demand for the dollar. And as the U.S. now has gone in a different way from all of their central bank counterparts who are still providing, you know, assistance or stimulus or QE, however you want to define it, the U.S. has gone away from that. They have a divergent monetary policy, and they're actually raising rates. So, you know, over the last 10 years, all the central banks, including the U.S., injected liquidity into the system, creating this milkshake. And now in the last 2 years, we've swapped out our syringe. We're no longer injecting liquidity, but instead we've swapped out our syringe and we've put a straw down into that milkshake, all that liquidity. Mm-hmm. And we've started to lift up on our interest rates. And lifting up on that interest rates, in my analogy, is like sucking up on a straw. So we've got the rest of the world providing this liquidity, but because we're raising our interest rates, we're sucking up all the liquidity. So they can keep injecting it, but until they get a straw, we're going to steal it. And it's kind of a messed up way of our markets going higher. But I think because of that, our markets in the United States are going to go higher. I think this, if you think about QE, QE or stimulus is really a way of taking liquidity that is not currently in the system and injecting it into the system. Well, just because the Fed is no longer injecting money into the U.S. system, if we are pulling everybody else's QE into our system, it's basically the same thing as QE.
Yep.
So we're robbing everybody else's QE. We're stealing their QE. We're pulling that QE into our markets. It's almost as if we're continuing to do QE ourselves. That allows our markets to remain liquid. That allows our markets to expand. That allows the Fed to continue to raise interest rates, making it even more attractive compared to everybody else, which creates this benign loop in the U.S. where it allows our markets to expand and rates to go higher, and it creates a vicious loop outside the U.S. where dollars get more expensive, their liquidity becomes even less. And so, you know, you get this point where I think we're going to have, in my opinion, we haven't seen the blow-off top yet. I think we're going to see that over the next couple of years. I think it's all going to end very, very badly. But I think in the meantime, the U.S. interest rates are going to go higher, U.S. stock prices are going to go higher, and we're going to have this big blow-off top as we drink the rest of the world's milkshake. So I know I rambled on for 5 or 10 minutes there. I apologize, but that's kind of the core of how I see the markets playing out.
Woo. Yeah, that's a lot to digest. But no, great summary, because it's a big topic. And, you know, this topic filled a 40-minute video. So great summary of it. And we've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio. And stay with us, because we'll be right back with Brent Johnson. We're going to continue this conversation, and we're going to get into some of the specifics here and kind of hopefully shed some light on what the ramifications are going to be. So you're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back. And without further ado, we've got to jump right back into this conversation with Brent Johnson, head of the Santiago Gold Fund based down in San Francisco. And he is here talking today with us about his dollar milkshake theory and I understand 100% of what you're talking about. You and I share a lot of similar views. Summarizing this, even to bring up a topic, even to reintroduce a new thing that we're discussing or a new segment of the radio show is tough because it's such a dense conversation. And I can tell you've probably spent a lot of time like I have, just kind of sitting back, staring at the ceiling, trying to grapple with the way that things have changed over the last 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I encourage everybody, I'm more than happy to answer questions. I'm more than happy to send people my presentations and my thoughts. But at the end of the day, everybody kind of really needs to think through this themselves. And I know some people maybe have the training to do it and some people have the time to do it, whereas others don't. But you know, I read tons and tons of research. I try to read as much stuff that I disagree with as possible to help me figure out where I'm wrong.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's really where this came from, is I can't even begin to tell you how many hours I've just sat around and thought about this stuff and tried to figure out, how could I be wrong? How could this happen? How could something that I don't think that could happen, how could it happen, right? And, you know, it's it's kind of a crazy time. I mean, I think we're going to see things that many people don't think is possible. But I think, you know, as we get to the end game of a debt super bubble, you're going to see things like that.
Right. And I have spent probably more time prepping for this interview than any of the other interviews we've had, just personally, because I was so excited to talk about this topic. The way that I got Brent, right or wrong, the conclusion I came to is I want to approach this and ask these questions in a framework that kind of goes as follows. I want to take the way that I see this and the way I internalize it and run it past you. And feel free to shoot it down, critique it, correct it. But that was kind of the only way I could conceptualize it, get my hands around it. So,
absolutely. You go ahead, and I'll do my best to answer it in a clear and concise manner.
Okay, so one of the ways that I've started to think about this, and I started wrapping my head really in-depthly in 2011, 2012 around this whole thing, because watching this all unfold and not seeing the rapid deterioration in currency valuations and currency prices in the form of inflation shocked me. I thought when we saw the onslaught of QE and the determination of central banks to keep the status quo going at all costs, Mario Draghi, whatever it takes. I sat there and went, here we go. It's showtime. And I remember backing way off our gold positions in 2011 because I just said the inflation isn't showing up. And one of the things I started thinking about and seeing was fund flows always matter. I think it's a thing that a lot of retail investors don't really understand and can't get their head around, right? But asset prices do not always, and you can make arguments about which is which, but asset prices often do not reflect value or the perception of value. Oftentimes, they reflect fund flows. Now, one of the things I've sat back and I've kind of interpreted your dollar milkshake theory is sort of along that lines, that regardless of what the underlying fundamentals may be, fund flows trump all. And Trump, pardon the pun, right? That's a hot topic these days as well. Saying, look, pay attention just as much to where you perceive value. Pay attention just as much to where the capital will be flowing. How have you put more, I guess, impetus or more weight on fund flows like that because of this dollar milkshake theory? And kind of how do you
Without question. The most important thing in almost anything to do with finance is cash flow. Right. At the end of, even if you're a bottoms up fundamental investor, you go through all the, you know, fundamental analysis, you come up with a cash flow from, you know, sales and operations and, you know, et cetera, and you get a number of cash flow that company should be earning every year, and you discount it back, you know, to a present value to come up with a valuation that you think is appropriate, and then hopefully you can buy it for less than that present value. And, you know, that's kind of, even, you know, if you go back to the Graham and Dodd type investing, value investing, that's how you do it. So even if you're that type of an investor, cash flow or flow of liquidity is the most important thing. So, you know, valuations are extremely important, but they're a horrible timing tool, right? Just because valuations are high doesn't mean that they can't go higher. Just because valuations are low doesn't mean they can't go lower. All you're doing is it's just a representation of where you're at in a current period of time. And I've heard people say there's no great investment that you can't ruin by paying too high a price. And I agree with that. I don't prefer to be buying things at high valuations. But it's my job to figure out where we're going, right? And I think where we're going over the next couple of years is higher valuations based on flows.
Yeah. At this point, the value inside investor inside of me is dying because I hate looking at things that way. But I've said on the radio show many times before, good or bad, our job is to accomplish our clients' goals and to make money.
Right.
And we don't want to do that in a reckless fashion. But yeah, you gotta go where it is. Now, okay, on to the next one. Another theory that I've been working on for a long time and that I heard echoed by you in a much more eloquent way, as a matter of fact, was to me one of the signposts of this thing starting to come to a head the monetary issues that we know are inevitable, right? I completely agreed with your assertion that, look, this is going to end badly. It always was. It always will. That doesn't, none of this changes my mind on that. But one of the signposts that I've always seen was, I think that the beginning of this blow up for gold, or the beginning of this giant upsurgence in gold, will be marked by gold and the dollar rallying very hard together. And every time I've said that, people have looked at me like I had a third eye. I would love for you to give us a summation of why you agree with that. What is it? I think the listeners know why I think that. I'd love to hear why you see it the same way.
So, okay. So there's a couple of reasons. Now, they can't go up together as far as the dollar gold ratio, right? Obviously, right. One has to go up versus the other one.
Right.
So if the dollar, can be doing great against all the other currencies, but gold can be doing better than the dollar, right? And so that's kind of what I mean. If you think about the monetary system and you go back to how I talked about how it's designed in a certain way and it has a design flaw, and this design flaw is that the monetary system has to continue to grow. And the way that typically continues to grow is that the dollar stays weak. If the dollar gets too strong, I don't have time to go through the whole reason why, but if the dollar gets too strong, it actually puts a lid on the growth of the monetary system.
Right.
And so as the monetary system starts to break, that leads to, chaos. It leads to contagion overseas. It leads to uncertainty. And typically when you get chaos and uncertainty in the monetary system, that's typically a pretty good time for gold. Now, I happen to believe that when the dollar initially breaks out, and kind of how it's been doing the last 3 or 4 months, that's not going to be a great time for gold. And we've seen gold drop $100 in the last 3 months. And so I'm not convinced that now is the time that gold is going to break out. They might be ready to go up together. But what I think is going to happen is that the dollar is going to go up dramatically against all other currencies, perhaps even against gold initially. But as that starts to break the plumbing, for lack of a better word, of the monetary system, and it starts to break some of the other economies that have borrowed in dollars and can no longer pay them back, I think that that is going to lead to some chaos and contagion. And at that point, I think people will be trying to buy dollars and gold. And therefore, dollar can continue to go up against all their other currencies, and gold can start to go up against versus the dollar. And so they're both kind of rising together. Hopefully I've explained that in a way that I think that they can both go up together.
Yeah, no, I once again, that's why I was excited to have you on here, because I've got my harebrained ideas and you've got a you've got a more eloquent delivery and a more nuanced way to look at it. And I think that makes perfect sense. And for those of you just joining us,
there's one other point I want to make, and I think this is a little bit counterintuitive, and I think this is perhaps why people struggle with this a little bit, is a lot of, anybody who has been involved in the gold world for more than, 5 or 10 minutes has heard the fact that, the U.S. has all these debts, they can't pay it back, they're going to have to print the money to pay it back. When you print the money, that's going to devalue the dollar, it's going to inflate it away, and gold's going to go to the moon, right?
Yep.
And that is certainly a possibility. I'm not, I'm certainly not talking down or talking bad about anybody who holds that viewpoint. That's a very rational viewpoint. And eventually that is what will happen. It will have to. There is no way that the U.S. can pay off all their debts. The problem is that every other country is in the exact same situation that we are.
Right.
And in many cases, it's even worse there than it is here. And so, when you think of the whole monetary system, the global monetary system, everything's kind of related. Everything kind of works together. When things get bad in one place, capital tends to flow to another place where it isn't quite as bad, or where it's better. And so I think a lot of times people also think of inflation can only happen when the dollar goes down. Well, that's not exactly correct. I mean, it is correct. I mean, if the dollar loses value, then things priced in that dollar typically go up in price. But you can also have a situation where the dollar is getting stronger. And if the dollar is getting stronger because money is flowing into the U.S. And then that money flows into the U.S. and it flows into prices, whether it flows into commodity prices or whether it flows into home prices or whether it flows into stock prices, and those prices rise, you can get increasing prices with an increasing dollar. And so you can still have, and maybe you just call that asset price inflation rather than consumer price inflation. But I guess the point I want to get across is that just because you have inflation does not necessarily mean that the dollar is losing value. A lot of times it does, but it doesn't always have to be that way. And I think that's what we're going to get into. I think we're going to get into a situation where prices are rising in the U.S. because it is perceived to be better than everybody else, or it's perceived to be growing in a healthy manner. Now, I don't necessarily think it's going to be growing in a healthy manner, but it may be perceived as such. And so you can get a situation where, it creates this loop that I was talking about. It creates a benign loop in the U.S. and a vicious loop outside the U.S., which begets even more dollar strength, which begets even more higher asset prices. So I think if I had to, get one point across to the listeners today, is that you can have a rising dollar and rising prices together.
Right. And I think that buttresses up or backs up both of our takes on why asset prices could go higher, because I think the other thing to keep in mind, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but here's the way that I see it, and I'd like to hear your feedback on it, is that if that scenario takes place, or when that scenario begins to take place, and that capital flight into the U.S. for the reasons that you've previously outlined intensifies and grows stronger, we also have to consider the fact that we are in a, for the most part, a 0% interest rate world still, and that people have to have performance. And that's one of the reasons I've sat there and looked at these U.S. stocks that, don't get me wrong, yes, they're egregiously valued. But when these people can come in and buy these quote-unquote blue-chip-type stocks that are throwing off a 3.5% yield, coming out of their sovereign debt world, right, what they can get in sovereign debts.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, they start looking at these blue-chip stocks going, wait a second, I can get 3 times the yield and the growth potential off these. And meanwhile, with record stock buybacks, with the repatriation of funds into the United States, and I think the evidence bears this out, it ain't slowing down. You've got this perfect setup for, although the value and the underlying activity in these companies may not be getting better, again, the fund flows. I have a hard time seeing that occurring and creating lower asset prices.
Exactly. And it really goes back. You hit the nail on the head, 5 or 10 minutes ago when you started talking about fund flows. The fund flows are the key to the whole milkshake theory. Now, if the fund flows stop, I will be proven dramatically wrong. So, let's just put that out there. I've kind of staked my claim on these fund flows are going to come to the U.S.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I talk to, and listen, this is not me trolling these people. This is not me making fun of them. I have a lot of friends who disagree with me, and I have great respect for them, and I like them, and I think they're very smart. And this is not me saying I'm right and they're wrong. I just happen to see it differently than they do. And a lot of them that I speak to are convinced that for the U.S. markets to not buckle and not go back into a recession, that the Fed is going to have to reverse course and that they're going to have to go back and do QE. And I just see absolutely zero evidence of that. They have been raising for 2 years now, pretty steadily. And every time, they raise, somebody says, well, they can't do it again. But they keep doing it again, and they say asset prices can't go higher. Asset prices go higher. And going back to the fund flows, I've been doing some research on this, on how much flows have come into the U.S. this year, and I'm still in the middle of it. But what I've come up with so far is that almost $350 billion has come from the euro area into the U.S. equity markets this year. So if you divide 350 by 6 months, that's $50 to $60 billion a month that has been injected into the U.S. economy. Now, 50 or 60 billion is about what the Fed was doing when they were doing QE. So, in my opinion, it doesn't matter whether the injection comes from Frankfurt or whether the injection comes from the New York Fed or whether the injection comes from Japan or China or South America. As long as it gets injected, the economy can keep expanding.
Right.
I just don't see why we would I mean, the Fed has listen, I am a huge, huge critic of central banking. I do not like central banking. I think they have done more damage to more people than perhaps any group in history. So this is not me being a defender of the Federal Reserve and central banks. But if you sit in their chair and look at things from their point of view, they have been raising rates for two and a half years. The markets haven't buckled. From their point of view, things are looking pretty good. And why would they risk changing course, going back and, you know, losing credibility by reversing and going to QE when they can just steal everybody else's? And nobody even knows that they're stealing it. It's not perceived as stealing it, right? So,
right.
You know, I can't figure out why they would do that when they can just grab everybody else's. Now, I would love to be proven wrong. If somebody can show me why they would go back and do their own QE rather than just taking everybody else's that's sitting there for free, I would love to see that analysis.
Yeah. All right. Well, hold on. Now, we want to keep you for one more segment here. I know you've got to get going, but we got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Stick with us. Again, we're with Brent Johnson, Chief Investment Officer and founder of the Santiago Gold Fund, and you are listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show, and thank you for joining us. And if you are just joining us, we're lucky enough to be joined by Brent Johnson, the founder of the Santiago Gold Fund, as among other things. Manages his own clients' money as well. And want to get back into this conversation because we are talking about his dollar milkshake theory and how it shapes the world. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but one of the intriguing things, I believe when you and I first started going back and forth, I said, look, here's it's fascinating because I see the world very similarly. And oh, by the way, that's probably the kiss of death for your theory. So in no way am I saying that that backs it up. But getting in to this and tackling it from a different angle. One of the intriguing things to me about your theory and how it aligns with the way that I see things is you mentioned, and I watched it again this morning, the dollar milkshake theory, which you guys can see on realvision.com. We've had Raul Paul on before, the founder of Real Vision. I suggest you guys go check it out. Invaluable information. But you also talked about bonds, and that was intriguing to me because we've talked about that on the air. Typically, when we see rates going up and dollar strengthening, that leads a flight into bonds. But let me tell you something really interesting that I've seen happen that kind of backs up your take on this and that goes along with mine as well, which is we got to consider where we're at in terms of interest rates and then where we're at in bond prices and then where we're at in the way that most people hold them. What I'm watching is interest rates going up. Finally, a lot of these average investors and retail investors are sitting there going, wait a second, I'm losing money in a bond fund. And now people will sit there and they'll dismiss that because that's happened before, right? Rates have gone up. But when you've got a bond portfolio, let's say paying you 6.5% in interest, and interest rates go up a little bit, that might knock the value of the principal value of that bond down a little bit. But the amount of income that you're getting off that portfolio is still offsetting that loss. And overall, you're still taking a profit on that position. When the coupons are as low as they are now, we raise rates a little bit, knock that off. And we're seeing this, especially in bond mutual funds, where clients are going, holy smokes, I've had a negative net return on my bond funds over the last 2 years. And what they're doing, I'm watching them doing it. The flight is into stocks. The flight is into blue chip type stocks that we referenced earlier that are throwing off, you know, decent dividend yields. I think that to me is going to be one of the big shocks about this whole thing, that those bond losses, real principal bond losses for the first time really in 40 years, I look at it and I think that's going to be one of the biggest propulsions of this market to the next level. How do you see it?
Yeah, so this is another critical part of the theory, and I'm glad you brought this up because and I'm going to do my best to explain this. I understand it in my head, and I'm going to do my best to explain it to you, and hopefully it makes sense. It's funny because even a friend of mine who is a big bond guy and one of the smartest guys I know, and is a big believer in treasuries right now, you know, sent me a note the other day saying, Brent, for the life of me, I can't figure out your view on bonds. So I'm going to try to, and I'm actually going to meet him to kind of discuss it in more detail. But here's my thing on bonds. Bonds have been in a 40, 50 year bull market. Yeah. Interest rates have gone down for the most part since 1980. And so, someone could have been investing for the last 50 years and, or last 40 years. And as long as they didn't, trade in and out of them over a 1 or 2 month period, they've made money on their bonds year after year, month after month, decade after decade. And so there's a learned biasness towards bonds that they can't lose money. And the fact is that they can lose money. While they haven't, it doesn't mean that it can't happen. And I think as interest rates continue to rise, I think bond prices now we've got to distinguish between bond prices in the U.S. and bond prices outside the United States. I think bond prices outside the United States are in big trouble.
Yep.
I think interest rates are going to go up much more outside the United States than they are inside the United States. But I think they are still going to go up inside the United States. I don't think bonds are necessarily going to crash in the U.S. because as our interest rates go higher, they actually become more attractive to the people overseas who are fleeing their domestic bond markets. And, rather than getting either 0% on a German treasury or, getting a 12% on a Turkish treasury because everybody thinks it's going to default, the U.S. treasury paying 4% or 3.5% or 3%, whatever it is going to look pretty attractive, I think. So I do not think that the U.S. is going to have trouble selling debt, but I think they're going to sell it at lower prices and at higher yields. And as people start to not make as much money on the bonds as they have before, and actually may even start to lose money on bonds that they've never lost before, I think there can be a psychological switch that I think it'll be a real shock to them, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. And I think when, correct or not, I think when they start to lose money on a consistent basis in bonds, money will flow on the whole out of bonds. And I don't think it'll immediately go to cash. I think it'll go into the equity market because, to your point, if you can buy, Philip Morris, which has a great balance sheet and, strong revenues and pays you 4 or 5% or whatever it is, and you have some growth potential, why don't you do that? So I think that type of move will happen. And I think as money flows out of bonds, that pushes interest rates even higher. But then as it flows into equities, it pushes equity prices higher as well. I have a lot of friends who just adamantly disagree with me on this, and they're very smart, and I do not like being on the opposite side of this trade from them, but that's just where I'm at, and that's kind of the way I see how I see things progressing.
No, and this gets in – I think the frustrating thing, at least for me, is I obviously am very much in the same position. I get other colleagues and other friends that I've worked with are sitting there going, wait a second, Zach, you think what? And I understand what they're saying because in a traditional format, in a traditional framework, they're right. However, I look at the world today and I sit there and I think that we are truly just beginning to wrap our heads around the way that this has all changed. Because like you said, when we live in a world where currencies are valued, we talk about dollar up, dollar down. What are we talking about? We're talking about the dollar in relation to other currencies. And when they're all doing the exact same thing, I tell our clients this all the time. I go, look, things are a mess here in the United States. Having said that, it still is the cleanest dirty shirt. And you've got to look at these things through these lenses. Like we talked about offline when we first got on the phone here today, there's a much bigger philosophical aspect to these markets that,
well,
go ahead.
And the other thing is I'm actually working on my mid-year review right now. I typically send out, kind of a review at the very beginning of the year and then another one over the summer. And the one I'm working on right now kind of talks a little bit more about the monetary system and the design and the fact is that there is plumbing that the monetary system uses, and there are certain channels through which capital flows. And these have been built up over a number of years, and the liquid is in these tubes, right? And based on the pressure in those tubes, it goes one way or the other. And I think because of the way the pressure is being built up and things are getting squeezed, in different places around the world, I think where most of that pressure is going to go is it's going to push liquidity into the dollar, and it's going to push the dollar price up. And as the dollar price goes up, money's going to then come out of the dollar and go into U.S. dollar assets and push. But that's where I see the pressure is pushing things towards the U.S. Now, there is a way that the whole system could break in which the liquidity could leave the enclosed system. But, and I think when the system starts to break and the liquidity gets out of the enclosed system, that's when it's going to go into things like gold, right?
Yep.
But even if you have a big complex plumbing system and one pipe breaks and some of the liquid starts to spill out and that starts to go into gold, that doesn't mean that the whole system is now shut down. There's still liquidity flowing through, all those other pipes and channels and tubes and stuff. And a lot of people will talk about de-dollarization. China's going to trade directly with Russia. Iran and Turkey are going to do a deal. China and Iran are going to do a deal and do them in non-dollars. And listen, that's absolutely going to take place. There's no question about it. The system itself is still very much a dollar system. It's like comparing a refinery with all its tubes and pipes to a hose, right?
Yeah.
Sure, China and Russia can put a hose between them, but it doesn't change the entire system overnight. And to redesign the entire system, it takes a long time, and everybody kind of has to agree to do it. And we're certainly not at that point yet. And as the pressure builds in this plumbing system, the liquidity will flow where it flows, where it can flow easiest, right?
Yep.
And I just come back to the fact that it's easiest to flow into the U.S.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And I've been preaching value from the time I started in this industry, and I've got clients sitting there going, Zach, markets are so over, why aren't we getting out of equities? I see the same thing. All roads seem to lead here at this point. And I can't see that no matter how I want to try to twist it or make it work, I can't come up with anything else as much as I'd like to, because I do feel, and I don't know if you'll echo this, but I feel somewhat like a tortured soul, because I feel like I'm saying things that go against, things that I've always held, true or believed in. And it's certainly an interesting time.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I remember putting out a presentation in 2011 or 12, where I talk about the design of the monetary system and how it's an exponential system and how with all the debts in the world, they're going to have to inflate it away, et cetera, et cetera. And, that will cause the dollar to lose value. And listen, I thought that they were going to inflate it all away from 2011 to 2014. But you know what? They didn't.
Right.
I thought they were going to, and they didn't. The other thing I feel like I need to get across is this is not a theory that ends well for the United States, right? We are ultimately going to lose the global reserve currency. Ultimately, the U.S. cannot pay off its debts. we are going to have to either default on some debts or we're going to have to inflate them away at some point. But my point is all countries are moving towards this end game. And as we move towards this end game, before the U.S. debt gets defaulted on and inflated away, based on the plumbing and based on the design of the monetary system and based on supply-demand fundamentals, the dollar is going to go much, much higher. Now, part of me doesn't like saying that, right? But that's what the evidence has led me to believe. And I guess one of my criticisms that I have with my friends in the gold world is that they will often use the supply-demand fundamentals of gold to show why the price of gold, you know, is going to go much, much higher. And I completely agree with it. You know, when this whole thing plays out, the amount of gold available versus the amount of that's going to be demanded is going to be off the charts, and the price is going to go, you know, much, much higher. But the same thing happens for dollars. Right now, the fact is people need dollars. The world needs dollars to operate. And the U.S. is no longer creating dollars out of thin air. In fact, we're taking dollars out of the system. So we have a situation where the demand for the dollar is still very high, despite the efforts of de-dollarization, despite the efforts of countries and entities to get away from the dollar. The demand for the dollar is still very high, and the supply of the dollar is no longer growing. And in fact, it's falling. And when you have increasing demand with falling supply, price usually rises. So, again, part of me doesn't like saying it, but that's where the evidence takes me.
Well, and I think that's a great jumping off point.
Here, I'm going to leave on this advice. Keep your mind open. Don't close yourself off to anything. No matter how impossible you think something is, try to figure out how it could possibly happen, because I think we're going to see a lot of things that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Boy, we're primed for it, aren't we? Anyway, all right, Brent. Well, thank you so much. For those of you just joining us, that's Brent Johnson, the founder and principal of the Santiago Gold Fund based out of San Francisco. Brent, thank you so much for joining us, and we can't wait to have you on again.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
All right. That was Brent Johnson. What a great conversation. And having that, like I've told you guys before, one of the nice things about this show is it's cathartic for me, at least. And it's great to talk to somebody else who sees the world in a similar fashion. Now, it does not escape me that having those types of conversations on the radio is probably not the best way to market our firm, right? To reach out to people and to get them to call. And we made a decision when we started doing this radio show that, yeah, there's a marketing aspect. Obviously, we want to give you insights to how we think and how we manage money and why we say the things that we say. But there's also, we were determined not to do it in a infomercial manner. We wanted to actually add to the discussion. We wanted to be able to educate people on the things that we see to avoid. And if this conversation interests you, if this conversation gets you kind of scratching your head going, man, you know, the guy I work with, my advisor doesn't talk like this, or he's not looking at things like this, or there's something that you guys said that really caught my ear, and now what do I do? How do I apply that? Maybe you agree with Brent and I about how crazy things are and how they could stay a lot crazier, but how do you position your assets to not only be safe, but to benefit from this situation that we see coming and we see unfolding right before us right now? Give us a call. If nothing else, you know, we can sit there and have it out on the phone, just like you heard me and Brent Johnson doing. We want to be a source of information. We want to help illuminate some of these things. And the other thing is we want to protect people from what we see as the inevitable issues coming down the pipe. And they're not issues that are going to be protected or that you're going to be sheltered from with the traditional stock bond portfolio. They're just not, guys. This is a different world we live in. And extreme times call for extreme measures. And I don't want to say we're doing things in the extreme, but you got to think outside the box. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. You can call us. You can email us. We'll set up a consultation. We'll compare our portfolios, 10 years, including the Great Recession, how we performed and what we cost compared to what you're doing. And I can tell you, you're going to be blown away. It's all about risk management. So give us a call. Go to the radio show website. Go look at our company's website. Download some of the information we got on there and get a second opinion. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week. Until then, you've been listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.